If you negotiate with your knee before standing up, you're losing that argument. Joint Relief Institute treats joint pain fast. And yes, it's covered by Medicare. Call 708-888-0000 as in zero pain.
All right, Reg, how are you doing? You feeling like doing a little podcast today? What do you mean, no? All right. We'll call for the right-hander. Relief pitcher. No. No, you gotta pitch at least six innings today before I send in the relievers. All right, get that get all these out of the way before we start the podcast here. Thank God nobody ever hears this. All right, get the trigger finger ready, and I'll give you the three S's. Star, smile, strong, and I'll give you the countdown. Ready? Here we go. 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNRadio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. Of course, it's always important to listen to the podcast on a weekly basis, but it's just as important to get out there and tell your friends, tell your family, tell anyone who listens to a podcast that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs too. Your loyalty and devotion are much appreciated. Of course, if you like what you hear, whether you've been listening to us for 5 minutes or 5 years or 10 minutes or almost 10 years, as we're getting really close to our 10th year anniversary, in about a month, well, 2 months, I would say, all of April and then toward the yards of May, so like 2 months away. But no matter how long you've been listening, if you like what you hear and you want to hear some old podcasts, either to have another laugh or to hear some stuff you've never heard before, they're all sitting there waiting for you at WGNRadio.com. You go to the podcast section, hit the podcast or hit the prompt for this podcast, and there you are. They're not all 10 years worth are there, but a good chunk are. So just keep loading more and scrolling down and loading more. And as I always say, it's always good to know where we've been, so you might have a hint as to where we're going. And right now we're going to episode 514 on our way to the 10th year anniversary coming up quickly, quickly, quickly. I know that... A lot of people that listen to the podcast have communicated with me either if I've met them in person or through different kind of emails or Facebook posts and things like that. And they always seem to get a kick out of when I try to do a do-it-yourself project, a DIY project around the home. I've if you've listened to me with any regularity, you know that I freely have checked my manhood at the door and admitted that I am not a very I'm not horrible, but I'm not a fix-it guy. I'm not a putterer. I'm good with some tools but not with a lot of them. I for instance, I don't know if I'd ever use an electric saw, to be honest with you. if there's a chance to lose appendages of any kind? No, that is something that I will take a pass on. And as I've often quoted, part of my adage when it comes to do-it-yourself kinds of things, I have lived by a famous line, at least for me, from one of my favorite all-time shows, The Andy Griffith Show. And there's this episode where Aunt B, in order to save some money with the household budget, has this very old freezer that hasn't been working in years, probably wasn't even working soon after she bought it. And it's just kind of sitting out on the back porch. And of course, Aunt B buys a half a side of beef because she's trying to save some money in the house. And she can get a better deal from Diamond Jim's new butcher shop by buying a whole side of beef. And she says, I've got this freezer just sitting here waiting, Clara. Why shouldn't I do that? I'll go to Diamond Jim's instead of going to the regular barber or the regular butcher shop. And so, of course, she buys this side of beef stacks it in the freezer. Then, of course, within 10 minutes, the freezer starts shaking and goes on and off, and it's going to be a problem. She's going to lose all this meat that needs to be frozen. And, of course, she doesn't want to call the man. Andy says, go call the guy from Mount Pilot, and he'll come out and take a look at it. And, of course, she's like, oh, you know how much it costs for him to come out? And she has Gomer, Pyle, you know, Jim Neighbors before Goober. They were cousins. Goober comes over, and, of course, he doesn't know what he's doing. He knows how to fix cars, not freezers. And Aunt Bee just doesn't want to call the professional because she's afraid it's going to cost too much. And Andy constantly, in frustration, says to Aunt Bee, just call the man. Call the man. And I just love the way Andy says it. Just call the man. Andy is smart enough to know that he knows nothing about how to fix a freezer. And if you want to get it fixed, you call the man. Now, it might sound a little dated in 2026. You call the repair person. I get it. But the line from the show, which is from the 60s, is call the man. And as I've said many times, and I've talked about some of these do-it-yourself projects, I guess I'm kind of like the Ray Rayner of do-it-yourself projects at home. You remember how horrible Ray Rayner was at doing those do-it-yourself projects on the Ray Rayner show when Chauncey would do the beautiful kind of art craft project, and then Ray would try to duplicate it with the same directions. You know, it was almost, in many ways, if you think about it, the Ray Rayner show was an early influence to the Great British Baking Show. You know how they have the technical challenge on that? If you watch the baking show, the Great British Baking Show, say that one 10 times fast, the Great British Baking Show with Paul Hollywood and the gang. If you don't watch it, it's one of the more popular shows on Netflix, has been for a long time. They have these baking challenges with all these competitors, and one of the challenges they do is something called the technical challenge, where the two judges, one of them being this guy Paul Hollywood, if you're not aware, they just give you, they tell you to bake this this one item, which you probably have never done before, and they give you the instructions, but they also leave some things out and on purpose and make you, you know, lean on some of your own knowledge. So they give you some of the basics, and then you have to create this really not knowing what you're doing, but sort of following those directions and following your instincts and also following your training. And they call that the technical challenge. And a lot of times some people do very well at it, and some people completely miss the boat. And so it's always an intriguing part of that competition. Now, Ray Rayner, on his morning show in the 70s and 80s, early 80s, used to have this do-it-yourself project. And there was, and I don't know if a lot of you knew, Chauncey, who he always referred to as Chauncey, never saw Chauncey. Chauncey was a woman, in fact. We just all, you know, back in the 70s, always just assumed it was a man. But Chauncey was a woman. And I don't even know if that was a real name or not. But she used to do the prototype of the do-it-yourself projects and then give Ray the instructions, and he would try to replicate it. And you would actually see Chauncey's. And they even do that on the Great Baking Show. They will have the two judges sitting and explaining what the technical challenge is, and they will explain why it's so difficult and what will be the challenge and what the bakers will have to do. And they show the finished product. Here's what it's supposed to look like. And then we go off to the tent and we see the bakers trying to follow these Spartan directions and trying to replicate, and then we see that what they create compared to what the way it was supposed to. As I said, some get it very close, if not perfect, and others look like they didn't even know what the heck they were doing, which they didn't. And I think Ray Rayner was the same way. Because Chauncey, I don't know if Chauncey was a skilled craft person or not, but she always did these craft projects, and they looked great. And then Ray, who seemed to have four left hands, you know, he just, I mean, back in the age of the white Elmer's glue, my gosh, Ray must have had permanent Elmer's glue on his fingers, and permanent, and the tips of fingers must have been permanently colored from all the different colors of construction paper he used. And he probably had a lot of cuts from all the scissors that he used, and wire and things like that. Ray was not very artfully, gifted, shall we say. And in many ways, I feel like the Ray Rayner of home do-it-yourself projects. I have a great willingness and a great interest in doing it and trying it. But at the same time, I also, like Andy Griffith, come to the conclusion that at times it's best to just call the professional, to call the man. And over the span of this podcast, and even when I've been on the radio, I've frequently talked about some of my attempts at doing things around the house. I've said many times, my father was not a putterer, and so he didn't pass that kind of knowledge to me in terms of fixing light bulb, you know, fixing electrical sockets or doing. I can do a few things, the basics. I could paint a wall. I could paint a room. I've done that. I can't say that it's as good as a professional at all, but it's not bad. But when it comes to some of the more difficult things. Earlier in my life, I certainly, in my home owning years, you know, you always try to feel like you can do this yourself. And, you know, it's kind of almost a little test of your maturity and your manhood. And, okay, I'm a homeowner now, and I'm going to do some of these things. And certainly, there's also an aspect of trying to save some money. There's no question. If anybody comes out to do it, it's going to cost, money. And so all of those things wrapped up in one, you know, if you know what you're doing, it's great. You probably save yourself a lot of time and money and aggravation. But if you're like me, if you're in that zone that you can do a few things, but when things get a little too technical, you start to go down a road, and if you go too far down a road, then you're going to do more damage than good, and then you're going to have to probably call the professional anyway, and they're going to have to not only charge you to fix it, but they're going to first have to fix the damage that you did to get back to the ground zero and then do the repair. And so from an expense standpoint, from a time standpoint, and from a confidence standpoint that it's fixed and fixed correctly, after a few do-it-yourself projects that sort of went awry, I've just, you know, admitted to myself and anyone else that when it comes to it, I gotta call the man. I gotta follow Andy's advice, as much as I'd like to get it done myself and save that money and get that nice feeling and sense of accomplishment. It's not that I don't have the ability to do it, but I don't really have that instinctual knowledge of it. What I've learned over the years, no matter how many times you could watch a YouTube video, and believe me, over the last several years, these YouTube videos have come in very handy. I know now you can go on and you can almost find how to fix anything. And I have done that, so I shouldn't say that I'm completely inept. I'm apt. There's another Andy Griffith reference in the Don Rickles episode, but in Newton Monroe. But, wow, that's really some references for you Andy Griffith fans there. But hopefully you caught them if you are. But I'm apt in some areas. I can fix some things. I'm not completely, but I feel when there's things that can be very dangerous, when it comes to electricity, you know, you don't want to fool around with that. When it comes to water, because water damage and electricity are the two demons of any household ownership, you don't want to make a mistake with water, and you don't want to make a mistake with electricity. And And so I've tried those, and some I've actually done correctly, much to my surprise. Others I've tried and then realized, okay, this is out of my pay grade here, and I've called the man. Then after that, it's like, you know what? It's just easier to call the man. I haven't completely laid down my arms on doing do-it-yourself projects, but when there's something that is going to take some real knowledge about something serious, and it's also going to require some special tools, which I don't have. I have a set of tools, but I don't have, you know, an electric saw, and I don't even have an electric, you know, screwdriver and things like that. I've got, you know, I told you my dad was no putterer. He had some things around the house to fix some little things. That's what I have. I have his toolbox, which wasn't all that extensive to begin with. You know, so one generation passes it on to another, whether it's a knowledge or lack of knowledge, it's still passed along. But once again, I have put down my male ego to say no, I can't do this. I got to call the man. And so here was another case where initially my first reaction was to call the man. And then there's that little voice, that little testosterone-driven voice, that little macho man voice that as much as you want to, you know, put him in the background, you know, let's face it, if you're a male, the testosterone is running through your body. You can't deny it, that masculinity is there. It's in our DNA. It's not all bad. I know a lot of people in today's culture seem to want to put that down, but it's part of the whole circle of life. And even though we have, you know, there's different views on that, you know, that's still a part of who we are. So, yes, I have, you know, I think wisely with humility, admitted that, I can't do that stuff. I've tried it. I've had some success, but I've had more kind of, well, let's stop before we do more damage. One of my jokes is that my hands, considering of my age, my hands are as soft as a baby's bottom. I don't know whether I should brag about that or not. But they are without calluses. Whatever scars are on my hands are probably more from sports than anything else. If I do have a scar on my hand, it may have been a long lasting scar. It may have been from trying to do a do-it-yourself project with something sharp and then realizing, oops. I tell you, talk about scar tissue. It can last. I mean, you know, I've got a few things on my hands that were from like freshman football, getting tackled and getting hit by a helmet that caused a scar that... It's certainly not as prominent as it was, but if I know where it is, and if I look in the right light, I can find it. And even in the palm of my left hand, on the side palm, on the outside part of my palm, I don't even remember this. I may have spoken about this on the radio or on the podcast. But apparently when I was a little baby, like, I don't even know, maybe a year old or just learning how to walk, year and a half, I don't know how old you are when that happens. But one of the first times my dad took me out on his own, wouldn't you know it? He took me out somewhere and he went to a gas station and I guess that, I don't know if he knew the guy that owned it or something, but I guess I was running around and I don't know if he was paying attention. And apparently I tripped as I was running and I fell on my hand on a open a can of cat food. Yeah, that's pretty scary. And You got to remember back then, they didn't have like these little rip-off kind of, you know, metal containers with the tab. They used a can opener, so it was very ragged and you know, with a can opener, there were sharp edges. And I guess it really did a number on my hand. My hand was most small. I remember my dad telling me the story. He said it was really scary and very bloody. And I remember growing up, and then I noticed my hand one day, and I'm like, why do I have a little scar here? I didn't remember this. I was like a year and a half old. And and my mom said, oh, well, that's when you fell on the cat can. I'm like, what are you talking about? And so apparently this was a pretty serious thing. I had several stitches, and if I look at this, I mean, this scar is very old. It's not red anymore, certainly, but if you hit the light, you can see it, and you could see it's still kind of a jagged scar with some of those little, you know, imprints from the cat can. Kind of scary. But yeah, but in terms of my hands, you know, they are as soft as a baby's bottom. A lot of blue collar work, not a lot of, I mean, white collar work, not a lot of blue collar work. I have tried, believe me, I have had calluses in my life. Let me just say that, but it's been a while. Ever since I started to call the man, my hands have been, you know, scar and callus free for many decades. In fact, recently, I'm currently in rehearsals for a play, and you know, they were looking for any volunteers to help, you know, put together some of the things in the set. And so, you know, I showed up out of, you know, teamwork, but I made it very clear, and I helped out, but not when it came down to some of the serious stuff. And once again, I pulled out my old standby. You know, hey, I call the man. And I even pulled out my, look at these hands. Feel these hands. Not a callus on them. And when they heard that, they were like, okay, don't even get near the tools, Jim. Thank you for coming. And we'll get by with people that know what they're doing. And they're better off without me. I would love to help. I'd love to be all macho and stuff like that and have tools hanging off of my belt and having calluses. But hey, what can I say? That's who I am. And so recently I had another little issue around the house. Anybody who knows, if you're a homeowner, you know that you can keep up with things and make spreadsheets and lists and you know, check the things you're supposed to check on a regular basis, and still things happen. You know, things break. What can you do? They're made to break, right? Well, this is one that I had no idea even happened for a while. So in the Chicago area about 2 or 3 weeks ago, we had a couple of days of some very heavy winds, some real strong winds, like 70 mile an hour winds with some weird weather. And they were pretty pretty fierce at times. And it was a couple of days in between, and they boom, it was like a boom boom kind of thing. And so, you know, you're hoping, you batten down the hatches, and you know, you look around after these winds, and you say, phew, okay, you know, we used to have a lot, you know, we've done a lot of tree trimming. You know, we have some trees on the house in the backyard, so I've done some trees trimming over the years because we have lost some really big, you know, branches at times. And so try the best to prepare so that there aren't any accidents waiting to happen. And so over the last several years, even though we've had some wind and flooding and rain, you know, flooding and winds and things like that, and especially around this time of the year in the springtime when, you know, you're going through that transition to winter, from winter to spring, you know, the weather can get volatile. We know in certain parts of the country there's tornadoes and cyclones and things like that around this time, and hurricanes in the summer. And so, But you know, so as a homeowner, you really have to be vigilant and make sure that you do what you can, because you know, things can happen. And that's really a part of ownership, home ownership. Yeah, it's great to own the home, but we also have to realize that it's kind of always a work in progress, because you never know. And Mother Nature, as I've said many times, will always remind us who's in charge. And it ain't us, by far. It's Mother Nature. Always has been, always will. Was in charge before we were around as a human species, and will be in charge long after we are gone as a human species. And so we had these heavy winds for a couple of days. And in fact, you know, we've got like a small little patio with some chairs that have like cushions on them. And I usually keep a couple of cushions out. We've got a little fire pit. And there are times when, even in the winter, we could get some nice weather, and so we'd go out there. So I keep a couple of chairs with a couple of the cushions out, just in case one of those little, we get a little warm spell sometime in the middle of it. There's been times in around Christmas time we've gone out there and had fires just because the weather was like 60 degrees. Well, so needless to say that after this wind thing for these couple of days, I mean, those cushions got blown all over the place. And yeah, I usually, you know, take anything out for the winter that is in the yard that could get damaged by the wind or something like that. So take any signs or little statues, whatever we might have in the yard. Bring all that stuff in. So it's basically very bare except for those two little cushions out there. Everything else is pretty much put away until now. Probably in the next couple of weeks, I'll probably start to bring that stuff out again. As I'm already seeing in our backyard plants beginning to grow and things like that. So the spring is here, definitely. It's both meteorological now and officially spring, by the way. So the thing is that the way the patio is situated in our yard, we have a detached garage. And so the garage, we have a long driveway, and I've talked about that, having to, you know, shovel or snowblow that thing every year. And so from where our kitchen window is, the majority of where the patio is placed is kind of behind the garage. And there's a wooden fence that runs along that side near the patio as well, along our property line. And but you really can't see, aside from these two chairs that I could see from our kitchen window, given the placement of the patio. From our kitchen window, I really can't see much of the patio or that whole side of the yard, including where the wooden fence is between us and our neighbors. And that weather that week was kind of strange in that, so I looked around and nothing, you know, looked around in the main part of the yard there. Nothing seemed to fall, no major branches, nothing in the front. You know, fine, okay, we made it through. Okay, cool. And then right after that windy weather, we had a surprise snow that came for like a couple of days. There was hail and snow on the ground. And so obviously you're not going to go out in the yard for that, you know. And then it got warm again, you know, and so just walked out into the yard like a week or so ago. Just to take a walk and get ready to say, okay, I'm going to have to start to, let's see if things are starting to grow and clean up. If, you know, that wind came, there might be some twigs. We didn't lose any big branches, thankfully, but a lot of times, you know, little small twigs and branches do fall when it happens. I'm going to pick those up and just get a little overview of how the yard's looking before the spring comes and we start to bring things out and bring all the chairs out with the covers and start to really use the yard again and the patio and the fire pit and things like that. So my wife actually went out before I did, and she came in and she said, you better take a look at this. And I'm like, why? What's going on? And once again, we had to go into the backyard by around where the, you know, that's, we can't see by the garage. And lo and behold, a whole panel of our wooden fence was gone. Wow, when did this happen? You know, you can't see it. I didn't ever thought that the fence would blow down, especially since we actually had the fence reinforced a couple of years ago. There was some damage from the wind. The fence has been up for about 15 years or so. So those wooden fences, the posts get a little weak as time goes on, especially with the wind and things like that. And we get some wind storms here in Chicago. But we had had some wind damage, and we had to replace the posts. And so I had no even thought. I figured our fence is pretty secured now. Well, not only was the whole panel gone, except for like the top part and the bottom, all the other panels had blown out. The wind must have been coming, you know, from this direction, that it blew all the panels into, not into our yard, but blew them into our neighbor's yard. And I was surprised to find that not only was it was strange because it wasn't as if it was the aftermath of the damage, but there was a paint tarp over our, where the panel was, and all the wood that had fallen, all the panels were in our yard, but there was a tarp over it. Our next door neighbor has a dog, and it was kind of secured, so obviously, so the dog wouldn't come out. So it was kind of jarring and surprising and yet confusing as to, well, what happened? When did this happen? But how did this get done? So apparently, our neighbor didn't tell us that this happened, which was kind of surprising, but whatever. But at the same time, you know, she did fix this, you know, because she realized, I mean, you know, that she wanted her dog to get out. So it was, you know, but I certainly would have done something. It's my problem. But she didn't really tell us. We kind of just discovered this. Just because the weather got a little nicer, if it had got remained cold, I don't even know, or snowy like that, I don't know if I would have even still known right now that we had a problem with our fence. So anyway, then we went out there, and our neighbor was there, and she said, "Oh," I said, "Well, when did this happen?" "Oh, well, you know, blah blah blah," and I didn't want, you know, so whatever. So now, of course, I've got a little, you know, little project on my hands here. I've got to either, at first blush, I mean, there's a whole panel missing, right? The poles are fine, but all the panels blew out. The top one is still there, the bottom one, but all the ones in the middle just blew out. So at first I'm like, well, guess what I'm going to have to do? Call the man, you know. Maybe call the insurance company, find out what I should do, call the man for an estimate, call the man to see what, you know, what needs to be done, blah, blah, blah. So first, you know, I thought, well, we need to clean, you know, this, the wood was just kind of, you know, in our yard, but all over the place. There were, you know, nails, you know, sticking out of the wood. That's what kind of blew out. Well, the wind must have really blown that heavily to have, you know, blown that wood out of there. I mean, those nails, because they were all still sticking out from the wood. So it was really an interesting kind of sight. But so there's all these panels of wood, and there was actually a, you know, like the a larger panel that went over the, like under the, over the, because it was a two-sided, you know, fence. And so some of the structure of the panel was actually still intact, but most of it was not, and all the individual panels just kind of blew off. So I had this stack of panels and this kind of outlined structure that would go over everything. And so I was like, well, let me at least, you know, get this into some order here. I mean, if someone's going to come out and see this, you know, this needs to get cleaned up anyway. And this could be dangerous, all these nails. So I went out and looked, really assessed this, like, okay, what really happened here and how much damage is here before I wanted to, you know, call the insurance guy or whatever. Let me just get a really good look at this. And I was surveying the situation. And then after, so I took all the nails out, several nails, took all the nails out and got rid of those. But I was looking at all the planks and I said to myself, you know, I mean, as much as this panel blew out, all the wood panels are still intact. It's not like they got destroyed in the wind damage. They were blown out. They came loose. But the actual wood panels were not destroyed. So after I took all the nails out and looked at them, I said, you know, and here's where the testosterone and the and the masculinity, you know, started to kick in. I sort of, you know, got the inkling that maybe rather than calling the man, calling the insurance, doing all that, you know, I mean, this wood is here. The pattern of the fence, I mean, I could copy it. I could see the way it's done on all the other panels. If this one bigger structure is still intact for me to be able to put on, I believe that I might be able to actually reconstruct this fence. All the wood is here. I've got a hammer. I've got nails. You know, I might be able to save myself some money or a possible insurance claim and actually, you know, not get a whole callus on my hands. Let's not go crazy. But, you know, I've been known to use a hammer now and then. I hammer in the evening. I hammer in the morning all over this land. You know, I've been known to hit a few nails. I've been known to use a screwdriver. Yeah, you know, I've been, you know how it is, Ange, you know. Oh, sure, I could fix a fence. Yeah, okay. So I get out there and I'm like, you know, I got my tape measure to make sure this is, I brought my level. Yeah, I got a level. I don't mind saying I got a level. Mm-hmm. You know, with the little bubble. Yeah, I said, I've got some of the tools. I just don't have the talent or the knowledge. I have the tools. At least the bare minimum of the tools. I remember one time in a friend of mine from a long time ago, we used to go golfing. We used to golf quite a bit. And this is when we were in our 20s. We're just getting our, you know, starting to get our clubs and doing all that stuff, you know. You know, at the beginning when we were young kids, we used to get hand-me-down clubs. And now, you know, we got our first jobs or something, and we're going to start to go golfing every week. And, you know, we got our own clubs and yet-da-da. And my one friend, he was okay golfer. He wasn't great. He wasn't terrible, but he wasn't great. But every time, you know, like all of us hackers, you know, he hit some goofy shots. And I remember one time he hit a few bad shots, and my friend, he had all the tools you needed. He had the nice bag and the nice clubs and the nice shoes and the whole thing, you know what I mean? He had all the golfing accoutrement, if you will. But boy, one thing he didn't have, and golfers, you know what I'm going to say here, right? Just didn't have a swing. Had all the right bags, all the right clubs, all the right lofts, all that other stuff. But boy, I tell you, you can have the tools, but you got to have the talent too. And that's how I feel with this DUI stuff. I have some of the tools. It's just the know-how. And I said to my friend, you know, as a joke on the course, you know, you're always, you know, throwing shots at people on the golf course, your friends. And, you know, like, you know, I said, you know, you got everything you need. You got the clubs, you got the bag, you got the shoes. It's just the one thing you don't have, a swing. I thought it was funny. I don't know. I haven't spoken to him in many years. I wonder why. Anyway, but that's how I feel. I have some of the tools. I just don't have the know-how. I just don't have it. And so something, I don't know, maybe it's the first days of spring, you know, you've been hibernating for a while. I don't know why I would even have thought of trying to do this. Now, the interesting thing is that about in January, when that happened, this is what's so funny about this. When this happened, and it wasn't, no, you know what? It wasn't even that time. It was a little windy. It wasn't during this real big wind. We've had some, you know, there was a little windy day. And I noticed that on our other side of our fence, the other neighbor on the other side, that's their fence that they put up. And it's an older, it was an older fence. And a whole panel collapsed. And I woke up one day and I could see that clearly from my kitchen window. Like, wow. They lost a panel, and I saw them come out there and putting like that orange mesh stuff there because they've got a couple of dogs. And so I never thought our fence, as I said, I think I looked after that one, after that wind, I went out there and looked, and everything was fine, so no problems. So I figured, yeah, my fence is secure. But then we had this other one in late February or early March, and that's when I think this must have happened. Or mid-March, whenever it was. And so, but the funny thing is, so then our neighbors decided, they had a guy come out, and then I think they decided we're going to just put up a whole new fence around their whole house. It was a pretty big job, although I'll tell you, once again, when you hire professionals, it's amazing. That was a big job. You're going to put a whole fence. They went, it was like, you know, three, you know, our side, another side, and then the other side. Three fence around their property. Big job. These guys did that in 2 days. Day and a half, really. Knocked down the old one, put up the new one. In fact, you know, they were right in our yard because they had to do, you know, the one side that bounds our yard. And, you know, I saw them, you know, they knocked down the fence, and then they, you know, the first day, and they put in the posts. And they had these other things kind of lined up. And I was like, and I asked our neighbors, I said, well, how long are they going to take to do this? You know, and they said, oh, they said they're going to be done. You know, they'll be done tomorrow after they knock down the other fence, that the three sides of the fences down, knock those all down and put those posts in. And they said, oh, yeah, they expect to be done tomorrow. And I was like, how, I didn't say this to him, but I was like, how the heck are they going to put up a three sides of these wood fences? In 1 day, and they had several guys, but still, I mean, come on, it's just, you know, the wood, you got to carry the wood, but you know, once again, they're pros. They do this every day. They do this 8 hours a day, every day. They know how to do it. And so, you know, while they were out there, you know, pounding and cutting and all that stuff. So I didn't want to, you know, our window was right there. So I closed the shades while they were doing the fence in our property on our side first, and they had to do, you know, like I said, the other two sides. But I didn't want, you know, look like I'm watching them or anything, so I closed the shades at, like, you know, they started at about 9 o'clock, and so those shades were closed for most of the morning. And I was telling my wife, I said, you know, there is no way that they're going to get this entire job done with these three sides of the fence by today. I mean, come on. Look at how much wood they have here. Look at how much space they have to go through. These fences are long on every side. And so around noonish, just for yucks, I was like, you know, okay, I haven't watched the progress of this. But I mean, they're probably halfway down our yard, and I wasn't really even sure what kind of a design of the fence they were going to have. It was a wooden fence, but I was like, you know, this takes time, and I've watched the guys do our fences too when they've put our fences in. But I was just like, this is a big job, you know, to do these three sides. We never put three. We've only in our because other. Our other neighbors around us have put up fences too, so we only had to put up one side of a fence, and so it's a job, but it didn't take that long because boom, you know, once again, these guys know what they're doing. And it was a while ago. But so just for yucks, I opened up the shades. And I'm expecting to see, like, you know, half of the fence done. Right? I mean, come on. It's been 3 hours. I'll give you 3 hours. But, you know, you got to put this wood in. You got to got to get it right. Boom, boom, boom. You know, at least that's in my mind. The uneducated fence fixer. I open those shades in the back kitchen window to look at the progress of that fence. And it was like I was looking at the Grand Canyon for the first time. They had the entire fence on our side from our yard, from our house to the end, and they now began to go the other direction to go, you know, and then going to come back the other way. But they had the entire fence done, and already we're working on now the one going in the other direction. I was in shock. I told my, get over here. Look at this. I never in a million years would have thought they would have had half of this done. Not only have they finished it, and they're on their way to the next portion. And I'm like, wow, that just goes to show you when a pro does it, what happens. Now, once again, they have the tools. They've got the electric, you know, ham, you know, with the electric, you know, with the nails, boom, douche, douche, like the gun, you know, like the nail gun, douche, douche, douche. And they've done these things a million times. I don't have calluses on my hand. I have a hammer and nails, right? I mean, I'm like a caveman with my rudimentary tools made from some stones. And meanwhile, so it's like I'm like a caveman with some handmade tools and arrowheads, you know, and sharpened rocks, and I'm up against, you know, guys from 2026. That's the way it would seem. So, having just seen this like a month before, like wow, you know, look at that. I'm very impressed. I mean, that's one thing. I have great respect for anyone that does work with their hands. I have great respect because A, I can't do it, and B, I marvel at how well they do it. So anybody that, you know, is a construction worker or a plumber or an electrician or a painter or a roofer or whatever it is, any kind of construction, any kind of expertise, plumbing, electricity, painting, roofing, whatever, whenever there's, you know, some of that skilled labor, I bow to you and I give you all the props in the world. It's amazing. I don't have that knowledge. And it's amazing what that knowledge can do. And so I was very impressed because if you saw these guys, I mean, you know, I saw them down the street walking, I would never think that they could build a fence like that. But wow, wow, just skilled craftsmen, no question about it. So I was very impressed that, and I'm like, oh, they finished by 3 o'clock. I couldn't believe it. Cause now I kept watching this, like, this is amazing. This is a work of art. This is like Michelangelo with the Sistine Chapel. This is amazing. So I've already got that knowledge in my head of how fast those guys did that and how fast this job can go when you know what you're doing and you have the right tools to do it. Or you're me, when you don't really know what you're doing and you don't have the right tools to do it. But still there was this little errant dose of testosterone that still seems to be flowing through me and this still sense of machoism that says, well, I could do that, you know, I'm a man. And so I began to see if I could do this. And my wife came out there and she was kind of helping me as well, and we're kind of figuring this out. And if we put this here and here's the way the the design, or, you know, the way these planks need to go. We got this planks all set up with this one needs to go on top of that one. And then that one's on top of this one and da, da, da. And we got our measuring thing out there. And I'm like, we might be able to do this. I'm looking, I'm like, you know, hey, you hit, I'm not like, I'm just nailing these things back in. What's so hard about that? Well, it isn't easy. The wood is hard. The measurements are, you know, those other guys had, they had all the strings up, the whole, you know. Could I have done this? Yes. Would it have taken 4 days to do it? Yes. Would it have taken a pro to do it in an hour or two? Yes. Not 4 days. Would it be correct and right if they did it? Yes. Would I have 100% confidence that whatever I did, this still wouldn't get blown down by the wind again? I don't know. Would I have really saved myself some money here in time, or would I have just put a Band-Aid on a serious wound? So after about 2 hours of assessing the job and actually beginning to do it and actually putting nail, you know, hammer to nail and seeing how much progress I/we made in like an hour and 45 minutes to 2 hours, I said, you know what? There's a guy that does this. I think we would be better off to what? Say it with me. The three words that I live by. I think it would be best if we, 1, 2, 3, call the man. And so, you know, once again, I have as big as ego as anyone else. But I also like to think that I'm a realist and I don't do it for the sake of doing it. And then you do it wrong. I have learned my lesson. Like I said, everybody makes mistakes. The key is to not keep repeating the same mistakes. And so I've learned and I've come to accept that, yeah, you know what? I could do a few marginally things around the house, but when it comes to something that takes a little expertise, I could probably do it, but it's probably not going to be as right as it should be, and I'll be worrying about it, and it's going to take twice as long, and then I might do more damage. And so you know what? I got to call the man, especially after I just saw this fence put up about 3 or 4 weeks ago and how just with speed and accuracy and competence, and it looks great, and it's solid. And I'm like, you know what? I would be looking at that panel every time I went out on that patio. And every time it rained, and every time it was windy, I would be going out there checking that panel. And even if it was staying there, it would still be this kind of weight on my head. I think I may have told this story once before, but many years ago in another house that we had, I, you know, once again, young guy, you know, new house. Okay. Oh yeah. My wife said, I like to get a new kitchen fixture for the house. Okay. Well, do I want to call an electrician just to put in a fixture? Right. I mean, come on. It's like, should be easy enough. You put the same color, wires together and you put it in and zip, zip, right? That's the way it looks. The directions makes it look real easy. I watch the DUI shows. Oh yeah, put in a fixture. No problem. You put the red with the red, the yellow with the yellow, zip, 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 zop, 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 zoop, 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 zip, and turn it on. Well, it's only one thing. You know, the color wires didn't match. So now what? No two jobs are the same. Yes, I installed that fixture. Yes, it worked. And yes, for 3 years we were in that house, every time I turned on that kitchen light switch, I was waiting for it to go boosh. Every time. I couldn't believe I actually did it right. So yeah, did I save myself some money? Yes, but you know what? For 3 years, there was an apprehension in my body every time I turned. I'm not even lying. I mean, not every time. That's an exaggeration. But there was a little voice in my head saying, "I hope it doesn't blow up this time." So you know what? For the sake of my health and blood pressure, you know, and for a little just confidence and reassurance and security that it's done and done right, after spending a couple of hours and realizing we could do this, but it's going to take a lot longer, and it's not, we might get it done, but is it really going to be done correctly, that it's not going to fall down again? I mean, I don't know. Yeah, I could put these panels up again, but maybe there's some structural thing that I don't know, because I don't know. I'm just looking at it as a layman and saying, hey, the wood looks, it's in good shape. I took the screws out. Let me just put them back up. Well, it's not that easy. I don't have the electric, you know, gun with the nail thing. Those guys are going douche, 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 douche. And I'm going bonk, 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 bonk on one nail. And it's still not driving through. And I'm like, yeah, you know how long this is going to take me? And then, you know, and then the rest of the panels are shaking because I'm hitting the hammer so hard. So I summoned up that testosterone that kept running through my veins about this project and that machoism. And I said, get the hell out of here. And I piled up the wood and put the tarp back on so that the dog next door wouldn't get out and da, da, da. And guess what I did when I went into the house? Say it with me. Say it loud and say it proud. What did I do when I got back into the house? That's right. I called the man. And so we'll see. Of course, there's a lot of wind damage apparently in the area. And so a lot of wooden fences weren't able to stand up to them. And so it's going to take a couple of weeks. So the tarp will stay on there. There'll be a kind of a little eyesore. You know, I part of me wanted to get this fixed because of that, of the way it looks right now with this tarp on it. You know, I like things just to be nice, everything in its place and everything right. And so this is going to drive me crazy until this gets done. And, you know, I'm going to probably get out there and stain it myself. You know, we had it stained. And so, yeah, you know, when we had the new post put in, I actually went out and bought some stain and stained the new post myself. You know, let them settle a little outside and put some stain on it. So, yeah, I'm going to get out there with the fence. I'm going to have the fence guy fix it, but I'm going to get out there and do the stain myself. You know, I've got that gallon of stain. I've got a brush. You know, I'm going to stain it. So at least with the staining process, I could, you know, get a little of the machoism and let that testosterone do its job for, the hour or so that it might take to stain it. But I will know that when the guy comes and fixes it and does it right, it'll be up there for a while. And I could stain it, and it'll look nice. And I'll get my own little macho pride out of that. I'll sustain my manhood by the staining process. Not by the building process, but by the staining process. But once again, always reminded, I have the inclination, I have the drive, the ambition, the aspiration to do the DUI thing, the DIY thing, not the DUI, no. Wow. Oh, there's a Freudian slip. No, I do not have the ambition to get the DUI. That I don't have, no. I have the ambition to do the DIY thing, not the DUI. The DIY project, it resides in me, but the more logical side in me prevails. I've learned my lesson, and I for my own peace of mind, for my own time, and to, yes, to keep these hands in baby bottom condition with callus free, I have once again decided that when it comes to DIY, I CTM, call the man. And so ends another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNRadio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. And of course, don't forget, if you like what you hear, get out there and tell your friends, tell your family, tell anyone who listens to a podcast that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs too. Your loyalty and devotion are much appreciated. Hope you enjoyed episode number 514. I'm Jim Tirano. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. You've been listening to Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, from the end of my mind to your ears.